This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
There's a place here at the table. Your coats go by the door.
You can kick your shoes off in that pile on the floor. I hope you wore elastic, 'cause your waistband's gonna get tight. Take time's done, we're having a night.
Hi guys, it's Ari.
And I'm Sophie.
And you're listening to Having a Night, the podcast dedicated to reviving the lost art of the dinner party.
Oh man, Ari and I are together this week, which is big. You may have seen us last week together on Chip Hour, where we had our tarot cards read. How fun was that?
It was really fun, and it's been on my mind ever since. It really affects your life. It's not like you just walk away from that and go about your day. You're like, oh my God, every move I make has been cast already by the fates.
Totally. I'm like, wow, I'm part of this cosmic world, baby. Yeah, it's wild.
No free will.
So fun. Do go back and watch it on our Instagram if you are curious. It's on our IGTV tab. I don't really understand Instagram, but that's where you can find it.
Yes, with the fabulous Angie Banicki.
Oh my God, it was so fun. She's really wonderful. Anyway, okay, what did you eat this week?
I have one word for you, and that is...
polenta. I was like,
no,
what could the one word be?
No,
carrots.
No.
Okay.
Great guess.
Thank you.
The word is... einkorn.
Truly, you could have given me probably 150 guesses and I would not have gone to
I
that.
I know.
Also, the word einkorn really reminds me of Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. Remember Ace Ventura?
Oh my God, yes.
She's like, yes, totally transphobic, but the word einkorn
just
brings that up for me.
Do you know what it is?
It's an ancient grain, right?
There you go.
Tell me all about it. Did you cook it?
I did, and I had never made it before, and it's almost like a cross between a wheat berry and farro.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed. It really pops in your mouth. They're like little balls. They have great texture, and so I made a salad with some einkorn. It was truly just the only grain that we had left in the pantry at that point, and I wouldn't eat like a whole bowl of it, but
okay.
We roasted. I like to roast some vegetables. We did some sweet potato and onions and peppers, and then some fresh herbs and some feta, and I think there was some, maybe like a currant. I also chopped up some peppadews. I wanted like something kind of pickly and sweet in there. And then the einkorn just kind of like gets into all the nooks and crannies of all the veggies.
Totally.
Really delicious fall salad.
When I think about a grain salad, that's the kind that I want. I don't want a huge mound of grain. You know, like, God, remember when bowls were a big deal? Of course you do. It was like 9 months ago. But it's like a grain bowl that's 3 cups of quinoa and 1 carrot and half an avocado. I'm like, that's the total wrong ratios.
Exactly. Like, I used to hate quinoa, and I think that's just because I would make a huge bowl of quinoa and like just try and eat it as a side.
Exactly.
No,
right.
No,
three
no,
bites
no.
later, you're like, no more quinoa.
Exactly. It just should be like a small portion of an otherwise vegetable heavy salad.
Yeah.
My opinion.
I made a fonio salad the other day. If you guys have not heard our episode with Chef Pierre Thiam, highly recommend it. Very cool grain called fonio. So good. And that is like so small.
Yeah, it's like a mini couscous.
Yeah, exactly. Like teeny tiny couscous. Love it. Well, this past Saturday was my birthday.
Yay!
So I want to talk about my cake because we all know a fancy cake can be great, but I got funfetti cake and
love
funfetti
it.
Icing, and Harry decorated it, and it was so good. My parents, Harry,
huge crowd,
our 5 friends who came, who have all been in the neighborhood. Everybody was like, this is the best cake. How did you make it? I was like, how did I make it? I put in 3 eggs and some oil and some water, and then I mixed it.
It's the best. What mix did you use? What's like the standard? Betty Crocker?
So Harry did a little bit of market research. Not market research. He looked on the internet, and they only had Duncan Hines and Betty Crocker. He went for the Duncan Hines, which I was like, that's very off-piste of you. It was delicious. And then classic Pillsbury Funfetti icing. So I think Pillsbury has the trademark on Funfetti.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to go classic, you're probably going to go Pillsbury. But I found the Duncan Hines cake mix and the Pillsbury icing to be a mwah, bellissima combination.
Oh, that sounds so good right now. And it's also so light, even though I'm sure it's so worse light. For you than making a homemade cake. You can, it's kind of like an angel food cake.
Totally. 4 pieces later, I'm like, bring it on.
Yeah.
So good.
Delish.
I actually feel like Funfetti is sort of like the spirit of the guest that we have this week.
Oh, that's so right on. It could be his spirit cake.
Right? Wow. Dan, we hope you're not offended that we think Funfetti is your spirit cake. How could you be offended? I want it to be my spirit cake.
Me too. It's like kind of the highest form.
Yeah, it's sort of like being like a unicorn is your spirit animal.
Yeah.
Like, lucky you. So this week we have on the fantastic Dan Pelosi, a.k.a. Grossy Pelosi, who honestly, any of our listeners probably already follow him on Instagram, but if you don't, go check it out.
He's incredible. By day, he's a creative director, and he went to RISD with our friend Kate Knoll, who was on season one in our Taste Part One episode. So just highly aesthetically minded and just has a great sense of design, but is also from an Italian-American family and is an incredible home cook. And so he started this online persona where he just cooks these extravagant Italian-American meals. I'm talking about meatballs, lasagna, eggplant parm, chicken parm, just like all the classics, comfy classics that we all are craving right now. But with this goofy, loud, amazing, Grossy Pelosi style that's kind of, I don't know, it cannot be imitated. It's
yeah.
just so authentic.
Authentic, we love that buzzword. Very authentic. And I also love that he's doing the heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not trying to be like, here's a penne alla vodka sauce updated with rose water. You know, it's like he's not trying to go crazy. He's just trying to help you cook the most delicious version of a meal that you already love. We had so much fun talking to him. I mean, he's so easy to talk to, so open, so garrulous.
Obsessed with him.
Just wonderful. So thank you so much, Dan. And enjoy this episode, everybody.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, ladies.
We're so excited you're here. I want to start actually with knowing about your job as a creative director. And like, how are you a creative director and this incredible food chef personality? How do you manage both of those things?
You're touching on something that has really been like, climaxing for me in the past couple months, couple weeks. Maybe today I had a little meltdown about it. You know, I'm so, so lucky to have a full-time job that I love and that I make money at. And it's such a blessing right now to have that. And I've had this job for 7 years and I love the people that I work with. It's been, you know, I work for a retail brand. So it's been a really, really tough time. I started working from home and then I was furloughed for a couple months in early mm-hmm. summer, late spring. And that's where like, this started in a way, or at least was platformed, because working from home meant I was cooking 7 days a week. And that meant I was doing what I would normally do on Saturday and Sunday every single day of the week, which is cooking mm-hmm. and talking about it and documenting it. So for those 2 months of April and May, when I had nothing to do but do this, I was created sort of like a standard of what Grossy looked like to the world. And people couldn't imagine that I had another job because I didn't, but then I actually do. And so when that started again, working from home allows me to do what I do, but the attention has been more and more, which I'm super lucky about. And so now I'm like literally working harder than I've ever worked, and I'm almost 40 and it's like exhausting. And so, but I've never been more creatively fulfilled or happy about anything. So, you know, it's like I'm managing both. It's exhausting and I love it. And I'm trying to focus on self-care and saying no, but like I still answer every DM. I still feel like I need to be putting out a new recipe. I went from like 3 times a day to maybe like 5 times a week now. So
wow.
I've cut that down. Right. But I did a lot of work in the beginning. And I think that's how I gained so many followers so quickly, because people were like, wow, this guy like doesn't stop. And I think people still get that, but I've had to stop a little bit and it's not figured out. I don't know how I do it. I just do it. And I do have a lot of internal conflict and debate about it. It's not easy, but I love it. So I'm following that, you know, and maybe we can flip the house and maybe I can do this for a full-time job someday. We'll see.
Did you start Grossi Pelosi like in March then?
I made a decision at the end of last year. I had a death in the family. I lost my dream home upstate. I like had all these like moments where I was like, oh my God, this is the worst year ever. What can I do? So I decided that 2020, I was going to like do something free, which was focus my Instagram on a specific creative interest, which was food. My Instagram had a lot of other stuff going on. And I was like, let's focus on food. I have so many friends in the food world. I had so much encouragement from people throughout the years. And I was like, let's just do this and see what happens.
Yes.
Crazy that I made that decision. But by the time March 13th came around, my Instagram had like mostly food and it had a lot of like recipes in the highlights. So people were able to like come to my page day one of work from home and see me as this like person who's truly a home cook. And so I had set up without even knowing it, this like foundation. And then like I launched my website on June 18th. I launched my product line on like April 13th. So like this is all very new. The crazy thing is people are like, you've been doing this for years. And I'm like, no, I just probably thought I deserved this for years, but I never did it. Right. Like, I like probably was like
I've been holding it inside like, and I just ripped off.
Like, I should be famous, obviously. And I'm certainly not famous now, but you know what I mean? Like, I have the gumption to like pull this off. Yeah. Everything came together and it's a little awkward that during a pandemic, I've sort of found my purpose. But I think my purpose has been partially to be a presence, but also the majority of the feedback I get is that I'm actually helping people get through this situation, this sort of unique situation, which has been really, really nice. So I've been able to try and focus that attention people are putting on me towards others and do good.
Yeah. I love that. It's such a great time also to just be busy and be busy with something that feels personal and like a gift to everyone, but also is a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but I'm learning so much and everyone is so lovely. Like people are just so, so lovely. It's really amazing.
So let's talk a little bit about hosting in the home, which I'm sure is something that like we are all missing so much. Just today, I was like, my circle of people that I see has gotten so small. Like it's very depressing.
I just want to set the scene for all of our listeners before we get into this, because you can go see Dan Pelosi's apartment on Domino and Curved, and it is so happy and gorgeous, and there's so much color. I mean, I just need to put that out there because I'm imagining going to a dinner party at your house and being surrounded by, you have so many great gallery walls filled with such great fun art, just like the dinner party of my dream. So
thank you. That's so sweet. And you know, my apartment is just my favorite place. I've always created spaces and spaces with the focus of entertaining. And New York has been such a place where I've been here for like almost 7 years, and it's been a place that's really made me super happy. And I think my apartment and my home is a reflection of that. And I think, you know, I moved into this apartment because I knew that I could build a 10-foot dining table and host 14 people. So that was like the dream. And now you're right. Like it's so hard to not be able to have those parties and those events. I would always, you know, I was known for my dinner parties, and people, it's funny because I have like almost 35,000 followers right now, and in March I had like 7,000. So all of these people have only seen my life through the lens of COVID, and it's like, you know, when I start to do these little things that are poking outside of the world, like when I have a dinner party, like people are going to be like, oh my God, is this your first? A lot of people are like, is this your first dinner party? And I'm like, oh my God, I've been doing this for like my whole life, you know? So it's really interesting. And I so hope that we can get to a place where we can do that. I have been able to throughout the summer and the spring, I have a great front yard with like a picnic table, and I love, and I hope that people think of me when they think of creating these dinner parties and this hosting. And I've learned so many beautiful ways to pull that off from different people in my life, whether it's my family or there's a friend of mine when I lived in San Francisco in my 20s who was a drag queen named Juanita Moore, and she hosted like the most beautiful parties at our house, and it was always a mix of different people at the table, and she would print out the menu and the food was incredible, and she would always give people little tasks so they felt involved. And I just picked up like so many gorgeous notes from her that I think have like allowed me to create these beautiful experiences in my apartment that I really love. And you know, they're not perfect, but they're just like what I like to do and what I'm doing.
100%. I mean, we have to go deep on this, right? So like, first of all, I want to, of course, know all of the tips from Juanita Moore. Was that her name?
Yeah.
Do you generally do seated? Do you do buffet? Do you do family style? Like, do you always have an aperitivo hour? What's the run of show, you know?
So I have some ground rules, which may or may not make me sound like a monster, but it just helps me feel really good. Mm-hmm. But typically, I like to, like, provide the food. Like, I like to sort of be like, I don't want people to worry about bringing food. I usually say bring weed or wine. Like, that's all you need to bring to my house. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't drink, so I don't know how to buy a bottle of wine. It's not in the cards for me.
Oh.
So I'm like, bring drinks, bring wine, whatever you want, or just like, please bring me some weed so I can be chill while we're eating and while I'm cooking. So the two W's is sort of what I ask people to bring. I typically say, like, I got the food covered, because it's really nice for me to think about the full experience of the meal. And I will spend Saturday and Sunday in the kitchen, and then Sunday people come over for dinner. Like, I love to do all that work. So that's sort of a ground rule. I think also, like, music. I always like to invite someone who is good at music, because it's not another strength of mine. So I love to be like, here's the, you know, put the playlist on, figure that out. If we're doing a larger party with my roommates are amazing. They're good cooks themselves, but they always do like a cocktail, or like for our cookie party, we have to talk about the cookie party. For the cookie party, my roommates do a special like holiday cocktail for it. And we sort of divide things up that way. As far as like, I like to have a meal where everyone's sitting and the food is on the table. Mm-hmm. Buffets can happen, but it has to be like the boys are coming over to watch a movie and the food's on the counter and like it's very casual.
Uh-huh.
And everyone's like sitting on the couch, or everyone's bopping around, like sort of like, I guess the equivalent of like straight people who watch like football games or whatever, and have like, you know, like nachos on like the table in a crock pot, which I love as well. But like, typically if it's like a dinner party, it's like food's out, we're sitting. My uncle Tony, who's passed away a long time ago, but he was hysterical at dinner because he was kind of an alcoholic and he's super Italian. And I was a little kid and I would always be so antsy at the table, and he would always yell, "Nessuno fa vecchio su tavola," which means no one gets old at the table. So it's this sense like when you're eating, specifically like in Italian families, that like time stops when you're sitting at the table and eating and chatting. So you shouldn't be anxious. You shouldn't be trying to move on to the next thing. You shouldn't be, you know, you should just be like embracing the moment. It's like this beautiful thing, right? My friends will probably laugh when they hear this, because I do get a little anxious when I'm hosting. I want to make sure that everyone's having a good time, and I'm always like trying to manage things. It's not a perfect experience, but that's also kind of the fun of it, because then they're laughing at me, or I'm not going to sit around and pretend like it's the easiest thing in the world to host. And people always ask me, like, what do you make for a dinner party? And I'm like, well, you make a lasagna, you make a thing of meatballs. Like, you make the thing that can sit in the oven, it's ready to go. And then when people arrive, you're not trying to, like, you know, make all these last minute food situations. So
you're not searing off your steak a la minute for, like,
yeah,
you want it medium or medium rare?
No,
or
totally.
Of course,
totally.
The nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
How are you with when guests ask if you need help?
I typically know who to say yes and who to say no to.
Ooh, very good. Very good.
I have that sort of down. This is so funny. Oh my God. Some of my closest friends are like, you're an absolute like monster in the kitchen. But, you know, like if it's new people, I see what they can bring. Why not? Like, I don't like, I think the idea of perfection in my head is maybe a little bit more intense than how I execute. Like, I actually try and have fun and be pretty chill when I'm hosting.
So what's the story with Bimby? So Bimby is your grandfather, and it sounds like he really like looms large in your culinary education.
Oh my God, he sure does. And you know, it's funny because I think like Bimby is 98 and he just is like so cute, and he knows the best way to cook everything, and so does my dad, and so does my mom, and so do all the other people in my family. But it always kind of boils up to Bimby, because like we don't have that much time with him left, so I want to be able to share him. And my dad's so funny, because he's like, well, I have a really good recipe, and I'm like, I know, like we we love you too, like we know you're the next second coming of Bimby, like totally, but like we just gotta talk about Bimby for a minute. So
like when you're 98, I'll find your recipe.
You're not a legend yet.
Yeah,
there can only be one.
My dad is quite legendary. There are some dad's recipes, and there will be more for Thanksgiving coming up. But yeah, Bimpy's just like, he just is the best. Everyone who knows him, everyone who doesn't know him, thinks that he's like a national treasure, and they're totally right. So, you know, and I think like, that's what I'm here for, is like these old recipes, these old family stories. And I just love like old people and what they mm-hmm. do and what they've done. And we're losing them, and we need to keep them alive. So yeah. Hopefully, at least through my recipes and my stories, we're able to do that, whether or not they're here.
Well, it also, yeah. I think it brings so much richness to a recipe, because then it's not just about, hey, make this, it'll taste good, you'll forget about yeah. it the next day. It's totally. Like, it really does come from somewhere, and it comes from a Absolutely. Place of love and care. And what's yeah. more beautiful than that?
A lot of times I like develop the recipe influenced by the many people in my life who've made a lasagna over the years, or who have made meatballs. So then it becomes kind of my take on it. But sometimes it's like, okay, like, that's Bimpy's pasta pizzelle. Like, he, that's how he makes it. Cause we're not fucking with that recipe. Like, pasta pizzelle is like so brilliant. It's so simple. And like, we got to give him credit for it. And then sometimes like my mom's recipe. So I feel like it's not just me developing the recipes. It's me like taking recipes, telling the story of the recipe, and whether it's my recipe or someone else's recipe, it's really like really been nice to like expand the cast of characters beyond me and what I'm making. I have plenty of recipes that are my own, but so many of them are inspired by a history of people making it. And yeah. I always talk about the Carolyns and the Marilyns, which are like my mom's best friend, Carolyn, and my dad's cousin, Marilyn. And they make the same Easter rice pie, but how do they do it different? And like, I mean, there's these old books that I'm obsessed with that are like the fundraiser, the church fundraiser, or the high school fundraiser, or the mother's mm-hmm. club. And it's like, 14 Marias submit their lasagna recipe and yeah. they're off by one ingredient, but like there's 14 lasagna recipes in that book, because you're not telling any of them that their recipe didn't make it into right. the book. So it's like that kind of energy that I'm like,
it's very democratic.
But I'm also just like obsessed with it, because it's like so good. Like everyone has their own way of doing it, and
yeah.
all of them are valid and all of them are amazing. And a lot of my recipes are like my take on all the history of those women and those men doing their version of something, which I love.
Did they write any recipes down, or did you have to do it?
I have some. Others, I like call my mom and ask her how she does it. And that's where like I feel like I'm doing the work, because I'm taking the different written things and the different verbal things, trying them, and then coming up with the way that I think is best to do it. Which yeah. is like not the best way to do it, but it's the way I think it's the best way to do it. And that's the work. So it's all over the place. My meatball recipe, I never even wrote it down. Like I've been making my meatballs for like 20 years and I never had anything written down. So I had to spend the back half of the summer testing my meatballs so I could even get my own recipe down. Totally. Because right. I don't, like, who measures anything? Not me. Right. Like I don't do it yeah. unless I'm baking, yeah. you know?
Yeah,
so exactly. that's been really interesting too, because I never shared my recipes. Like I just was like, people would come over and they'd eat my food. And then I was like, oh, people might want them. So I started sharing them in January. A lot of my recipes I write as like a guide too.
Right, it's yeah.
like, you know, like there's only so much hand holding to do. It's like, this could be an inspiration. It could be a guide. It could be, you know, like some things, it's like eggplant Parmesan. Like I can't give you quantities for eggplant Parmesan. Like, I don't know how big of eggplant Parmesan you want to make. Like, you know, so it's like, it's like, here's the elements, make a pot of marinara. You might have some extra, you might need mm-hmm. more. Like, that's just how we cook.
I also just think it's so lovely. And even though it is self-selecting the way you're writing recipes, but it's if the people who do hang on and go through it, you're teaching them not only the recipe, but like to kind of let go a little yes. bit. And you're teaching 100%. Them to be, you're teaching them to fish and not just... Yeah. giving 100%. Them a, you know,
and that's
I don't need to know precisely how much salt. It's just like however much exactly. salt feels like yeah. it needs.
And it's like, make it once and then adjust from there. And I think I've been writing the recipes. I started writing the recipes like conversationally, because like, that's how I learned how to cook, right? Like I just hung out in the kitchen, and that's how it sounds like that's how you learned how to cook. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to write it like I'm standing next to you. Like, I'm like, grab a bowl, or like, this is, it looks great. Like, look at her. She's gorgeous. Like, you're doing an amazing job. Or like, this should be hard. Like, this is not a perfect process. Like
right.
chicken cutlets, like who's breading and then frying a chicken cutlet and it's perfect. Like it should look fucked up. It should be messy. The kitchen should look like an explosion. There should be grease everywhere. That's the experience. I'm okay with being a mess or being told that it doesn't work, you know?
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When we were looking at, you know, your domino and your curbs and everything, you were saying that you think more is more when it comes to color, which I think Ari and I both agree with. But do you feel like you subscribe to the same philosophy with your cooking? Like you're just saying, like, do a cup, but like, why not do more? Do you feel like you're like, the most flavor you can have, the most, like olive oil, butter, like, let's do everything?
I think for me, it's not like more is more. It's like, something that amazes me, and maybe this answers your question, but like people are always like, what mayonnaise do you use? What olive oil do you use? Do you do butter or oil? Or do you do like on your pasta, do you do Parm or Pecorino? And I'm like, is it Tuesday or Wednesday? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't have a mayonnaise I use. Like, I use mayonnaise. Some of them I probably wouldn't use because I'd be like, that's not great. And then you learn. But like, I think for me, it's like not more is more. It's just like, I'm open to using all things. I'm not like a throw everything in because we have it kind of person, if that's what you mean. I think it's like, I might like make pasta with butter and salt and pepper one day. And then the next day I might do olive oil and garlic and Parm. And like neither one is the way I do it. I do them both. So I think I like options, but I don't think I think I'm a little bit more on the minimal side in terms of cooking. Because a lot of the recipes are quite simple, I think. Like Bimpy's pasta pizza, it's like, don't put salt and pepper in it. Like, it doesn't need it. You know, like, that's not the vibe of this recipe. And I'm so happy people can do whatever they want. Like, I'm so, so happy. But, like, the vodka sauce or the tomato butter sauce, those two sauces to me are, like, so pure in the way that they exist via the recipe that, like, I refuse to put fresh herbs in either of them. Like, there's this desire to chop up basil and put it on top of any pasta in the whole world. And for me, it's like, absolutely not. Like, I just, to make the basil sauce or to make Marcella, or to make, sorry, the vodka sauce or Marcella Hazan's tomato sauce and add chopped basil on top, it just makes it it shifts the recipe so much for me. And I am so glad that other people do it. That's totally fine. My hope is that they eat it one time without the fresh herb and they don't think that the fresh herb is like a given on top of any pasta sauce, because they're actually, I think, our pasta sauces or sauces in general that don't need chopped basil on top.
Well, also basil is a very strong flavor.
It's so strong.
It's like, delicious. It's beautiful, but it's not made for everything all the time. Yeah,
totally. And so there's things like that where I'm actually like, I don't think that's how I would do it. And I put it in there and I get a million photos of people who make the vodka sauce and they put basil on top. And I'm like, so couldn't be happier. Like, great, great, great. But for me, it's like, I do have some limits to those things. But I try not to have rules, you know? Mm-hmm. So hopefully people don't hear this and think that I have like, that's a rule. It's not a rule. It's just for me, it's like how it makes sense in my head. You know?
Well, I think you're just being like, maybe just try it once the way it's written, because what if you actually really love it?
Yeah. I mean, that's the hope, but it's only with certain things, you know, like other things I'm like I launched this fall salad a couple weeks ago, which is like my favorite fall salad. And it's got like butternut squash and kale and pepitas in it, and like everyone's making it and putting craisins in it, and I'm like like, that makes, like, I get it, like, you've seen we've seen that salad on a menu at a restaurant a million times. And they're like, people's instinct is like, you have to put craisins in it. And I just like, right. I'm like, no, like that's not how I do it. But like, that's great. Like put a craisin in it. Like, fine. That makes
yeah, if that's going to make you eat squash and kale, then
yeah,
please.
Go for it. Like, it's great. And I love it. And it's like, you know, cool. Yeah. Cool with me.
Okay, wait. Just to bring it back to hosting quickly.
Yes.
Because you are a creative director, obviously aesthetics is like such a big part of your life. When you host, is aesthetics also a big part of your meal? Okay, hit us with it.
So like I have napkins. I just have been like really piling up on the napkins. One of my really good friends, Caroline Hurley, is a textile designer. So I've had a bunch of her napkins. One of my really good friends who actually works for me, her mom lives in like North Dakota, and she made some napkins for a fundraiser that we did at work. And I like bought all of them because they were brilliant. She like went to Joann Fabrics and sewed squares with like neon like threads, and I was like, okay. And then now I call her and I'm like, when can you go to Joann's? We like FaceTime at Joann Fabrics, and I have all these like gorgeous napkins. And then I've told this story a bunch. I auctioned some off because people are always like, where do you buy your napkins? And I'm like, I make them. Like, a mom who has a sewing machine and can sew a square can make a napkin. Like, it's so easy. So it's like napkins. Like you said, my apartment doesn't really require much extra decoration. So I do, like, I'm sort of I call myself like a gay Pinterest mom because I'm like really obsessed with Pinterest moms and like Pinterest as a thing. And I do sort of like minimal, but like we do have like, I put up a Christmas tree and I have like cookie party, which is like very much a holiday event. But I don't do like decorations as much. I think that like through the food and shifting a couple things, if you have sort of like a apartment that's full of a personality, I think you can kind of pull it off. But really it's like the tables. I have a whole shelf that's now overflowing of like, I call it my prop library and I've been calling that for like 100 years. But you know, when I cook something, I'm thinking about the vessel it's going to be in. I'm thinking about the textile to be laid on. I'm thinking about the spoon. So it's like fully art directed. And that is not a choice. It's just the way that I am. It's not like calculated or strategic. It's just like, I don't know how to do it another way. So it's really fun for me. And it becomes like creative problem solving. And I'm like obsessed with it. And I love it. And it's amazing how many people notice that and ask questions. Everyone's like, where's that? Like, I made pancakes the other day and most of the comments were like, okay, cool pancakes, but like, where's that plate from?
Right.
You know, and then of course I'm like, oh, it's vintage. I got it upstate at a yard sale. And they're like, well, fuck you. Like, how do I buy it? And I'm like, so much of my stuff is not, you can't go buy it at the store. Like, I'm sorry. I'm almost 40. I've been going to yard sales and vintage shops and buying shit for 20 years. Like, I can't source that for you. I don't know. I feel so bad. I'm like, someday I'll do my like knockoff Target line, I guess.
I also think that's the whole point, right? Is like, you're you, and hopefully actually in being like, it's from a yard sale or it's from people a flea market or whatever.
More people will go to yard sales.
Yes, because why are you not going to yard? Like, I've been doing little local jaunts over the summer, very like sort of safely. And, you know, I went to P-Town and I went to a couple antique shops, and then I went upstate a couple weeks ago and I went antiquing, which antiquing for me is like things that are like $10 and under. Like, I'm not going to like, you know, Sotheby's.
Right.
But people were like, oh my God, what is this? Where are you? And I'm like, okay, like this is a teachable moment. It's amazing. Cause like so many cool things are secondhand. And
yeah.
Now people are asking me for travel guides, and I'm like, oh my God, like I everyone's like, what's the link to the Airbnb you stayed in P-Town
for? Oh God.
And I'm like, I want to give that to you so badly, but this is a moment where I have to say no. Like, I can't find my house on Airbnb again. And like, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
So, but it is an opportunity, and it's so fascinating to me that people want to know that about my life, and they want to know the paint color spec of my bathroom, and they want to know so many cool things. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to save that for like the future when I have the bandwidth to like become, you know,
goop.
Totally.
I mean, listen, this is what happens when you become an influencer. What'd you expect?
I didn't expect to become an influencer.
No, I know.
Actually, like, that's not true. I sort of thought I should be an influencer and I wasn't. And now that I am, I'm like, oh my God, this is so out of the blue. I was actually operating more successfully as an influencer when I had like no followers than I am now when I have followers.
You were like used to that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, oh, so breezy. And now I'm like, ah!
Yeah.
But it's all like so fun and ridiculous. And I was telling my family, because, you know, my aunts and uncles and my dad, like, it's hard for them to really quantify what I'm doing. Yes. So I was kind of walking them through it, and they were like, this just makes sense. Like, this is how you've always been. Like, I've always just been, like, chatty and telling a story, and I've always been, like, a thing. I've always been, like, extra, I guess. So now it's, like, my audience is just bigger, and they seem to like it. So that makes me really happy.
I want to make sure that you can get to your dinner on time. So, oh, Arch, yeah. Segue into fall pastas?
Oh, my God. I love... Okay, yeah, we have to.
Sure thing.
We should talk about fall pastas. So pasta's, like, obviously my focus. Like, I'm obsessed with it. But you guys were like, let's talk about fall pastas. And I just, like, laughed a little because I'm like, I don't really understand what a fall pasta is, right? Like, because then you're like, is it pumpkin?
I have very specific ideas of what I was thinking about. So I can explain to you. So in my head, when I start thinking about fall, I start thinking about some sage. I start thinking about some nutmeg. Of course, we're all thinking about squash. And maybe I'm thinking about like a duck ragu.
Oh.
Like I think to me, it's like once we start segueing into fall, we're getting out of those light pastas of like maybe a fresh tomato, fresh tomato with some fresh basil and some raw garlic. Yeah. Maybe we're getting into that butternut squash ravioli. Yeah.
It's all about squash, I think. Pumpkin and squash. I think actually that is what I'm hoping. And sage. Yeah. And for
and sage.
Is broccoli a particularly fall thing? Like I'm also, I think of like some kind of like broccoli rabe sage, like crumbled sausage situation or chiedi or something. Ooh, but like, I think that's
I mean, I make
the only
that
thing about
round.
That is sage. Exactly.
I have that. Yeah. And I don't put sage, but you could put sage. Being a Pinterest mom, think about the 1 million like pumpkin pasta recipes are like it's just like you pumpkin becomes like the word in front of anything. It's like pumpkin
nobody
like
supposed
blank.
To be mixing coffee with pumpkin. It's
So I for years I'm in charge of Thanksgiving in my family, so I do the whole meal.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. But for years I would make this, I think, I don't even know, like I sort of adapted the recipe eventually, but you know, when I was like 19, I was like on Food Network or whatever.com.
Oh.
I found this recipe that was, it was like a spinach pasta dough. And then it was like, the filling was like butternut squash and ragout and like lemon zest. And I think mint or basil. And I would make these sort of like very organic ravioli. And then I would boil them. So they were like spinach and butternut squash ravioli. And then I would boil them and then I would finish them in like a brown butter and sage like sauce.
See,
right?
Brown Which butter. Is, like this is what I'm
brown, doing. I was yeah, gonna say butter. That.
Mm-hmm. A ricotta gnocchi. Like it feels much more filling.
Well, I just like I saved my from like a strategy standpoint, I saved my marinara, my lasagna, my meatballs, and my eggplant parmesan for September because I was like, this is fall pasta.
Right.
This is fall cooking. We don't need a marinara and a meatball and a lasagna recipe in June and July.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and then I did a late summer bolognese, which could easily be a early fall bolognese or a fall bolognese, which is like fresh cherry tomatoes or grape tomatoes that are sort of barely just bursting with like meat and then nutmeg and cinnamon and bay leaf in it with I think basil. And that was sort of like a quick bowl, not like the 4-hour bolognese. It was like a quick, easy, like, you know, it's late summer. We want to like embrace the tomato thing. That feels like fall to me. But then everything else, it's like, if it's fall, it's like I'm making the Italian classics. I'm not really doing, I am though, I'm working on my mac and cheese and that's like fall. To me, mac and cheese is like fall pasta. It's like football season, which I don't participate in, but I fetishize. And like all of these, you know what I mean? Like all of that, like, mom food, like that is fall pasta to me. I think the idea of like making a cheesy baked pasta with like squash in it is not the idea that I have space for right now, I think.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah.
But I have no problem with it. I would love, like, someone please invite me to your house and make that. I will probably eat the whole thing, you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, I think I'm also like, you know, it'll be a full year of me actually talking about food in March. So it's like, we're just hitting the classics and getting those out. And then maybe,
totally,
maybe like fall 2021, I'll bring a pumpkin in or a squash.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. I'm starting to think about it through this lens of like storytelling, which is really cool. But it does bring up these questions, like what is fall pasta? Which I love. Fall pasta to me is just the pinch. It's a Pinterest moment. And by the way, if anyone's listening, like, and has a Pinterest account, I would be so happy if you followed me. I'm newly launched, and it just would make me happy because I'm working with them, and it's been really, really cool. The fact that Pinterest called me and was like, "We want to work with you," like, name a better day in my life. You know?
Wow.
Well, you're a Pinterest mom. I mean, how could the day get any better?
You're almost there. Almost there.
My Instagram is Grossy Pelosi. My Pinterest is also Grossy Pelosi. My website is danpelosi.com. GrossyPelosi.com also redirects, but I'm sort of trying to figure out, it's like, is it Barefoot Contessa or Ina Garten? I can't tell which one to go with yet. So we'll figure it out.
Where does one end and the other begin?
Yeah.
That's a great dinner party question.
Yeah, it's a good dinner. Think about that. I need answers. I also have I feel like your listeners might, I have a second Instagram account called MessyBun911 that's all about messy buns, which I just would love you to look at, to like. And I also need you to send me pictures because I live with two guys and one has a man bun, but the messy buns in my life are less frequent than when I used to just roam around Starbucks and the city snapping secret photos of messy buns. So I need
God, we're talking messy bun, like hairdo messy bun.
Yeah, hairdos. I mean, like, I think like four or five years ago, I was on an airplane. When I was in San Francisco, I used to live in San Francisco and Portland. I spent my like 20s in the East Coast and or the West Coast. And I would do cross-country flights a lot. And this girl sat in front of me, like directly in front of me. And she redid her messy bun like maybe every 3 minutes. And like I, for 6 hours, was in heaven because I was like, every time it was like a different thing. And then I could never predict when she was going to like take it down and redo it.
Yeah, she was over it. Yeah.
You know, I'm worried I was the one sitting in front of
that
me.
Was that you? Might have been you. But like, there's a story in every bun. And I don't know. I'm just obsessed. It's the like one the thing same.
I will say about the person who was redoing her messy bun is like, as a person who does not have a lot of hair, you don't understand how satisfying it is to do and redo.
I do think that there's something really beautiful about messy buns. So Bimpy texted me, called my dad and said, we need to eat polenta today because today is a good day for polenta. So I need to go figure out where I can get polenta.
Oh my God, what a beautiful sign off. Also, maybe a fall dish.
Polenta would be good. And I have to say, if you're baking polenta, I'm not interested. But if you're doing a layer of soft polenta under, do you guys remember the Michael Chiarello, like probably like not a great, but like the beginning of his cooking show?
Yes.
I think he probably was like Me Too'd, but the beginning of his cooking show, he would pour a huge thing of polenta on like a wooden board.
Mm-hmm.
And this like, I mean, that pour, I need to find the YouTube. It was so beautiful.
I think I can picture it.
Yeah. And you know, it's like those Italian, like those Tuscan where they just put a giant thing of polenta and they just put like meat and everything's just on top of this thing. And then you just scoop it up. They actually do that at, I think they do it at El Buco Alimentari, I think.
Mm.
Bimpy was like, I put it on my Instagram. I'm like, guys, Bimpy said you gotta eat polenta today.
I think I'm gonna make polenta tonight actually and tag you because
feels really right.
I wanna do what Bimpy says.
You have to, there is no choice.
What a hoot. I just wanna hang out with him all the time.
Me too. I wanna get some of those napkins.
Oh my God, his merch is incredible.
Oh, the merch. The merch, everybody, the merch.
It really pays to be a creative director by day. I wish we had gone to RISD.
I was about to be like, speaking of merch, have you seen our merch?
It's pretty good too.
It's very good.
Do a hat exchange.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. Once again, thank you to Kate Knoll for introing us to him because obviously this wouldn't have happened without you. Thank you for coming on and spending some time with us, Dan.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin, for making this episode Chef's Kiss.
Si, bellissima.
And we will see you guys all on Chip Hour, Wednesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And you know, Thursdays for our episodes. Oh my God, Sophie, what?
Oh my God, guys, we're going to see you next Thursday for some Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, I can't believe how fast it has come up on us.
In a weird way, I'm like, obviously this year is so difficult. And I feel like that makes the moment of actually giving thanks so much more important. Okay, true. I'm like, I'm going to save my emotions for next week.
Yeah, yeah, hold on. We've got a week left.
You're right.
Before we have to embrace the spirit of giving. Let's be selfish until then.
Okay. Love you guys. Bye. Bye.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.